Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. The pandemic put a spotlight on many of the inequities in Native America. Some Native students lacked adequate internet access when required to study from home. And persistent internet access problems, especially in rural areas, hinder business and communication. Now, some efforts to close the broadband access gap are gaining new momentum. We'll hear about some of those today and discuss where work still needs to be done. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canadians are in shock after the recent grim discovery of the remains of 215 children on the site of a former residential school in British Columbia. The remains were found using ground-penetrating radar. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the discovery has led to memorials across the country.
Memorials began springing up across the country to honor the 215 Native children who died at the Kamloops Residential School. Hundreds of pairs of shoes were lined up on the steps of the Vancouver Art Gallery by local artist Tamara Bell as a tribute to those whose remains were recently found.
I can't imagine a child that I love never coming home and not getting an answer. Every single mother, you don't have to be Native, you don't have to be anything, you just have to be a human being to understand that there's a huge legacy in Canada that is so painful, but this one was so hard because it's children.
Children's shoes were also placed on the front steps of Canada's oldest residential school in Brantford, Ontario. Here's organizer Charlene Hemlock.
Part of this, too, was our call to accountability and justice for our missing and our murdered children.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau ordered flags at government buildings across the country to be lowered to half-mast. Officials in Toronto said municipal buildings there would have their flags lowered for 215 hours, an hour for each of the children who died. Roseanne Casimir is the chief of the Tecumloops Tessequepemec First Nation in British Columbia. She talks about arriving on the scene where the remains were found.
I was taken back. I was shocked. And so when it was shared with me that these were children, our children, you know, from our community, children from our brother and sister, Casaltons and other communities, it was devastating. It was actually quite mind-boggling. And, you know, it brought some of us to tears. And, you know, I was surprised. I was heartbroken.
Prime Minister Trudeau said news of the discovery breaks his heart, adding that it's a painful reminder of that dark and shameful chapter of our country's history. The Archbishop of Vancouver, J. Michael Miller, said he's filled with deep sadness at the discovery and that the passage of time does not erase the suffering that touches the Indigenous communities affected. The Catholic Church was responsible for running the Kamloops Residential School. The church has never apologized for its role in the residential school system. Stuart Strathern is the mayor of Midland, Ontario.
A bit of a shock here. It's really an abomination to think that something like this could happen in a country like Canada. And really, I think we need to be speaking more about this and getting to the bottom of some of these, some people would say, colonial practices.
And from Ted Williams, the chief of the Chippewas of Rama First Nation.
It's a national tragedy. Unfortunately, there may be more to come.
Tomorrow, I'll bring you the reactions of the survivors of the residential schools and the calls for action. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Navajo Nation is set to receive $1.8 billion in funding through the American Rescue Plan to help recover from the pandemic. The tribe's allocation is based on its enrollment numbers of nearly 400,000. Tribal leaders say they'll work with the Navajo Nation Council, Judicial Branch, and other divisions to develop plans and allocate the funds. The Navajo Nation received notice from the Treasury Department last week of the initial funding. The American Rescue Plan provides $20 billion for tribes. Meanwhile, positive COVID-19 numbers have remained low on the Navajo Nation. As of Monday, there were two new cases reported and no deaths. The tribe's keeping a number of emergency measures in place, including its mask mandate. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now, National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Schools using thumb drives to deliver homework to students. Students gathered in McDonald's using the free Wi-Fi. Or taking exams parked outside the school building. These are all stories illustrating the problem of poor internet access Native students and parents reported during the pandemic. A survey from the American Indian Policy Institute found nearly one in five Native Americans on reservations have no internet access. Nearly a third of the rest said their internet connection was spotty. We'll hear more about this survey in a moment, but the reality is that in rural Native America, access to reliable, high-speed internet is a persistent challenge. The pandemic put a premium on online interactions, meaning Native communities were disproportionately left out. Today, we'll hear some efforts to address the broadband problems in Indian Country, including a program that can provide up to $75 for your internet bill. How is the internet where you live? Has the lack of the internet made living in the pandemic difficult for you? Call us and share. The number to join is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is Jeffrey Blackwell. He is the Chief Strategy Officer and General Counsel for Amerind Risk and a former Federal Communications Commission Office Chief in charge of Indian Affairs. And Jeffrey is Omaha, Chickasaw, Choctaw, and Muscogee Creek. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Jeff.
It's Jay Chokma. Actually, I'm joining you this morning from Santa Ana Pueblo. It's an honor to be on your show again, and I look forward to the dialogue and the calls.
Absolutely. Thanks. Always great to have somebody joining us from Indian Country. Also on the line, we have Tracy Morris, Dr. Tracy Morris. She is Executive Director of the American Indian Policy Institute at Arizona State University. And Dr. Morris is a citizen of the Chickasaw Nation. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Dr. Morris.
Chukma. That's Chukmata. Thank you for having me. And I am joining you from Autumn Land in Phoenix, Arizona.
Fantastic. Thank you. Okay, so I just briefly mentioned some of the stories that we heard from folks. Jeffrey and Dr. Morris, this is your thing. You hear this regularly. I imagine you're maybe even get a little bit tired of having to repeat yourselves over and over about the challenges of access to broadband in Native America. Dr. Morris, let's start with you. What are some examples you've heard of challenges that families have shared with you about, you know, lack of access to the internet, and specifically, you know, how the pandemic exacerbated that?
Well, it was, to your point, yes, it was a little interesting last year when all this came, you know, all crashing down on us and everybody was sent home. You know, we work for a top university in the country, and actually Arizona State University, which is what our policy institute is housed under, has the largest number of Native and Indigenous students in the country. We have usually over at least 3,000. It usually sits around 3,000 students any particular semester. So when everybody got sent home last year after spring break, well, actually they didn't come back. It was challenging and crazy work to, first of all, figure out how many students we had to make sure they were connected. I mean, we put together a task force because we literally, the university first told us, they're like, well, we emailed all the students and they said they had connections. Yeah, exactly. we had to explain it. It was like, okay.
And Dr. Morris, I know that this is like, I've heard shared this example before, but like, sometimes when people say they have connections, they're, you know, what they mean is like my cousin's phone, sometimes I can use it, you know, or as my dad likes to put it, like I have the internet. I just call my daughter and ask her to look things up. And so
you're absolutely right. And we literally put together an internal task force and reached out more than once, I think two or three times, to every single Native student to confirm that they not only had access that was that could at least do non-video Zoom, and that they could, you know, had a computer where they could actually do homework. Because a lot of people don't have it; they're using the school's facilities because we have so many. I mean, internet's ubiquitous; it's all over the campus. So you don't have to have access to, you know, where you live, because you can go to campus and there's computer centers and such. So we had a task force, and we reached out to every single person that was a student that was Indigenous. Do you have a computer that can do the work? Do you have a connection that can do the work? If not, okay, what do we need to do next? We were checking out hotspots and computers. We were FedExing them. We had people driving them to folks in that first couple of weeks, because that was the only way to assure that our students weren't going to get left behind with this change. Because if they went home somewhere, and we didn't know when we were coming back, you know, so it was a really shocking, humbling experience. And, you know, it wasn't just the Native students as well. Lots of students don't get access because they don't need to. It's everywhere. It's every coffee shop. It's at a friend's house. It's on the campus. So it wasn't just Indigenous students that were disconnected when the pandemic hit. It was a lot of them. And then that doesn't even begin to speak to what happened with the kids, even in the urban situations here in the state of Arizona, let alone the rural areas, you know, kids that needed to do STEM work and things like that. There was no connection. There was just simply one day there was no connection, and folks trying to do stuff on their phones. And it was shocking. It really was. Mm. I mean, we knew this. Jeff and I and a handful of other folks been working on this for years. And it's like, yeah, we all told you, you know, we all told you. But, you know, we work to be part of the solution, all of us, I think, because in the end, we can't let the progress that we've made, especially with our students, fall by the wayside. So that's the biggest story that made an impression on me. I mean, I've certainly seen the folks on the side of the road or in the McDonald's parking lots and that sort of stuff. But I experienced it directly with our Native students at the campus. It was right there in front of us. So that really impacted me.
And I feel like your story about, you know, that everybody was emailed and everybody emailed back and said, yes, I have it, is such a testament to why it's so critical to have Native people in the academic setting, in the university setting, because they know that there's so much more to just a student writing back and saying, yes, I have it, or, you know, even just wanting to make everything okay, you know, and not wanting to bother or advocate for themselves and things like that. We've seen that so many times when we talk about Native students in the university setting. Jeff, what about you? What kind of stories did you take away from the pandemic? And, you know, was this an opportunity for a big I told you so to the federal government, you know, in terms of broadband?
Well, no, not and I told you so. But you're right. At the beginning of this, you said, you know, we've been at this for a while, and I never tire of it. This is extremely important. This is the most critical infrastructure of the 21st century, all due respect to electricity and water. Mm. And unfortunately, it did take a pandemic to really peel back the lay of the onion and show that we don't have enough in Indian country. I guess there are two things, because I was getting a lot of information from Tracy and others about what was going on in colleges nationwide, and of course reached out to the schools that I went to. But really, the education for our youth, I'm very worried that we've missed an entire year with our K through eighth graders. I mean, it's hard enough to hold the attention of an elementary school child, and we're left fighting these issues around basic deployment and infrastructure, where we should be dealing, like so many other schools across the nation, on dealing with the applications or the platforms that will keep them engaged while they're online. But I think the most worrisome issue is that remote healthcare, telemedicine, in an environment where in urban and even in suburban and exurbs, there are platforms that deliver a level of healthcare connectivity to people, even over their mobile phones. In Indian country, because we didn't have the infrastructure in so many places, and also because the pandemic struck parts of Indian country so forcefully, and folks had to stay home as a matter of life or death, the lack of healthcare connectivity I heard about from just about every region of Indian country. At Ameren, we work with about 400 tribes, and we could tell that the tribes are on lockdown because they weren't in their offices. We weren't, you know, we're an institution that routinely tribes reach out to when there's an emergency. And when things went quiet, we really got busy. It was worrisome. But yeah, those two areas, education and healthcare in particular, the pandemic hit very hard in Indian country. And frankly, if we don't get it right this summer, we're going to miss with our native youth, we're going to miss another year of learning for them. So that's no, it's not an "I told you so." It's let's get things in gear is more the message. Thanks.
Yeah, Jeff, it's you bring up such an interesting point, which is like, you know, once again, we're in Native America, we're kind of behind the eight ball when it comes to we should be dealing with the applications online and how our Native students learn best using online learning. And instead, we're literally, you know, asking them to drive to the McDonald's parking lot and log in, you know, with a laptop that got, you know, it took 6 months to bring laptops, I heard, in some cases. And it's just fascinating to me the challenges the Indian country has faced. And then, you know, what we're going to talk about after the break is some of the solutions to this. There's going to be some money coming, as well as some real big efforts to bring broadband to Native America. And I want to hear from you. You know, how has a lack of access to the internet made the pandemic harder for you? Has it? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. We want to hear from you. Dozens of states are passing or proposing new laws that make voting more difficult. Native voting rights advocates say many of the laws are weakening Native strength at the polls and doing little to solve any perceived election security problems. We'll take a look at some of the new laws and how they could change things for coming elections. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood today. We're talking about access to the internet. Did you find it getting an internet connection a challenge, either because of cost or lack of options? Call us and share, especially how did it challenge you in the pandemic? 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go straight to the phone lines. We've got Luann in Hopi, Arizona, tuned in on KUYI. Hey there, Luann. Thanks for giving us a call.
Hey. Good morning. Hi. My name is Luann Leonard. I'm executive director of the Hopi Education Endowment Fund. And when the pandemic, everything started shutting down in March, we had students coming home who were desperate to find internet access. We tried to set up locations, community centers, but then those soon closed. And then the urban kids of course, everything closed to them, and they were having similar problems. So what we did was we quickly devised a fundraising campaign, and our goal was to raise $10,000 to help help our students purchase upgraded laptops, internet connect hotspots, internet connections, anything that they needed, printers that they needed to be able to be successful in class. And as a nonprofit, as well as others around the United States, we were able to act more quickly than our tribal government or federal government. What was really surprising was that our goal was $10,000. We raised over $50,000.
Holy.
The donors were generous. They really wanted to help. So we put out a call to our students, let them know we have this money up to $500. And we asked them to ask us in the Hopi way, which means, you know, ask for what you need, knowing that everybody needs something. Mm. Ask us for what you need. And we were able to fund just about everybody's requests. And because of the generous donations, we were able to open up the grant three times, and we'll have it again this fall.
Oh, Luann, that's a great story. What did the students share with you about how this enabled them to continue with their studies?
Oh, they were so grateful, because a lot of them, to buy this stuff, they had to get part-time jobs. But of course, all the fast food places, everything were closed, so they were out of money. Mm. And this little bit of support helped them out tremendously. We were hearing things that students were finishing their papers using their cell phones. That was the only thing they could use. It was just really outrageous, and we knew we had to move fast and do something. So we're very proud of that. We're very thankful to our donors. What's interesting now is we did a survey for this fall, what are your needs now? And some do still need the printers and computers, but a lot of them are saying they need support. They want to hear words of encouragement. I mean, they're getting tired. They're yes. needing that verbal support. And they're needing things like desks, a place to work with, because they got kids at home who are also on the internet. And I'm sure it's a bit crazy at times.
Yeah. Absolutely. Luann, thanks for giving us a call from Hopi, tuned in on KUYI. Jeffrey Blackwell is with us. He is from Amerind Risk. Also, Dr. Tracy Morris. She's from the American Indian Policy Institute at Arizona State University. Dr. Morris, tell us about the tribal technology assessment. I know this was done before the pandemic, but it was an attempt to try and nail down those numbers in terms of broadband internet access in Indian country.
Sure. So we set about creating a baseline academic survey of what Indian country has and doesn't have in terms of connectivity, access, and availability. And we set out on that task, and I think we started the research in 2017 or 2018. And we released the findings of our survey in early fall of 2019, thinking that that would probably be the last of what we did on broadband for a while. So it was pretty timely, not knowing, but we were really just trying to fill a void of research. There's just really not a lot of data on, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, well, how many tribes are connected and not, what do they have? That doesn't exist. It just doesn't exist in any comprehensive way. You can piece it together. So we set about, because we're a research institute at a university, we thought, well, this is the role we can play. We can create this baseline study. It's replicable. We can do it every so often and keep, start pulling together some of that data. So in 2019, when we released it, we found that 18% of respondents, which were all reservation respondents, we only surveyed reservation in the lower 48, and we had ways to exclude folks who were answering for their mother's friend on the res and that kind of thing. They had to use zip codes that were verified as reservation areas. But we found that about 18% of reservation residents had no internet access at home, either wireless or land-based, and that 33% were relying on cell phone service for at-home internet. Speaking to what Regent Leonard had said, we heard those stories as well about people doing their papers on cell phones. So it was really shocking. I mean, it wasn't. We anecdotally knew this, but nobody had actually quantified it. And so that we put that study out in August of 2019, and then here comes the pandemic. Hardly 6 months later. So it was an attempt to fill a data gap. The FCC that has released some information, but the way that they obtain their data is not directly from the tribes. There's no actual reporting each tribe and such. So we have more work to do in this area. We're just getting started, but it has served us. It served hopefully Indian country well. We've been able to put out a few briefs on that, and you know we continue to get asked to do more work on that. So. I hope that we can continue to fill that gap and show, you know, what we need in Indian country, what we have and how we're using it.
Yeah, let me throw that out there to our listeners. You know, when it comes to the internet, what are your challenges? What do you need? And is it a question of cost? Is it a question of not having access or maybe not having enough options? Call us and share. What's your internet story when it comes to the pandemic? The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Tracy, Dr. Morris, 18%, that just seems like a lot. I mean, how does that compare to the rest of the country?
Well, according to the FCC, where's my data? You know, the 79, so the FCC tells us in this year that 79% of the population have access to broadband, which differs from what we said, but they collect data differently, as I said. Mm-hmm. And then the disparity is different with tribal lands versus rural lands. So, for example, I'm scrolling because it's not something I can memorize here.
Right.
So let's see here. Urban areas are connected at 98.8%, and rural areas are connected at 82.7%, according to the FCC's 14th annual report in 2021. Mm-hmm. And you compare that to the 79% that they say tribes have, even that is a gap. So if that's the best case scenario, and even that as a best case scenario is showing a huge difference in access. And then when you aggregate the data in a correct way, even their data only says 67.3% of tribal lands in the lower 48 have access, as compared with, you know, essentially 98% urban and 82% in rural. That's huge. That's a huge difference.
Right. And I just wonder if folks still see the internet as something like the same as cable or as vital as, you know, electricity these days. You know, when you talk about like managing your budgets and things like that, I think that there's always this like cut out the excess and stuff like that. And these stories that we're hearing from the pandemic are really pointing out just how vital it is to have the internet, applying for, you know, when so many things shut down in person. So applying for unemployment benefits and having it all be online, when you have 20% of Native America not being able to, not even having the option to access the internet, I imagine that creates a really challenging situation. Tracy?
Well, it is challenging, but I think the tribal folks are spot on. They know they need this. And our data also proves that tribal folks have adopted, and a historic study that I worked on 14 years ago also proved that we were adopting new technologies at much higher rates than our counterpart population. So no, I think, and you've got to also remember, Indian country's young. We're generally a younger population than the rest of the population as well. So we get it. We know we need this. And it was life or death. It was the telehealth issue. It wasn't just the education, it was telehealth. Mm. And then civic engagement in terms of turning in your taxes, applying for unemployment. You try doing your taxes without the internet. I helped my dad do it. It was not fun. You know, it is a necessary component to to participating in life in the world now. It really is, and I think Indian country gets that. I really do. I don't think that's lost on anyone.
Jeff, I got to give you a moment to weigh in on this conversation, especially, you know, Tracy talked about the FCC. You worked for the FCC. What about these numbers?
Well, they're undeniable. I mean, the numbers are, you can feel them if you live in Indian country, if you travel in Indian country, if you touch it in any way. I really like what Ms. Leonard from Hopi had to say in Kwakwe to her. Ask for what you need. That is a very important ethic, not just a Hopi ethic, but should be an ethic in broadband as well. The problem is really multifaceted. We spent some time on this show, and we always do talk about deployment. Deployment being the building of infrastructures and networks. But we also have other challenges that we face in this broadband divide. In addition to deployment, there's adoption. We need help teaching our youth and our elders how to use and adopt technologies, how to use them effectively. Far too often have we kind of gone along to get along. So ask for what you need in that arena. Most certainly what you just mentioned, not just a little while ago, Monica, affordability. These numbers that Tracy is talking about, they are defensible from Indian country, and they're worse than you think because of the way that the data is developed from the FCC. That's a story for another day. But they don't take into account the nature of the cost of that service in Indian country. It's highly subsidized by the federal government, and it is highly expensive to communities, to our families in Indian country. And then the last is really access, and this is something that Ms. Leonard touched on as well. Access to the internet, having a device that is state-of-the-art that can support healthcare, learning, jobs, government services, you know, personal commerce, community engagement. These are expenses as well that must be addressed. So, the numbers, there's a lot behind the numbers. Right now, it's a unique time in the 22 years that I've been working in this arena. In response to the pandemic, there are multiple pieces of federal funding. And as anybody knows, in Indian country, New York isn't our funding capital. It's not our banking capital. It's Washington, D.C., and yeah. The relationship that we have with the federal government. So I'm excited to see the funding coming out and looking forward to advocating for more. And there's a lot out there around that.
Yeah, let's talk about, the thing that stuck out to me was the emergency broadband benefit. And this is just like real on the ground help for people. What can you share about it, Jeff?
So it was part of the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021, the last bill that then President Trump signed right around Christmas time, that little fiasco that he put on. It is $3.2 billion that is going to my former agency, the Federal Communications Commission. It's on the Lifeline platform for those who know Lifeline, but it's not necessarily applying the Lifeline rules. For eligible households on eligible tribal lands, it is an additional $75 a month monthly subsidy for connectivity. That's on top of the Lifeline subsidy. That's in addition to the $34.25. So it's the possible $109.25 to help an eligible tribal household pay for their connectivity. There's a couple key things. I would say if you're looking for a resource, the FCC has a resource on FCC.gov. My old office, the Office of Native Affairs and Policy, really got to hand it to them. They switched it into high gear to getting the information out around this. One must have both an eligible household and there must be a participating broadband provider. So the carriers had to, and it's not just your classic big, fully formed, regulated telcos, but also ISPs, very simple ISPs as well. Mm-hmm. So you do have to, so a household would have to contact a broadband provider, make sure that they're on the tribal land. And then the eligibility follows federal poverty guidelines and other assistance programs such as SNAP or Medicaid or Lifeline itself, which also has a series of tribal criteria like TANF and the National School Lunch Program.
And this, I mean, but this program is not just for natives, though, too. Like, it's available for people who need help with the internet across the board, right? It's just that the $75 is for folks on tribal lands because it's traditionally more expensive to get internet in rural areas.
Yes, nationwide it is available. Same criteria apply. Of course, there's additional tribal eligibility criteria. But nationwide it's $50, and then on tribal lands, because it is more expensive, like I just, you know, I said 5 minutes ago, it's additional $75 on tribal land.
Well, I'm going to put a link on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, if you want to learn more about that. If you're if getting the internet is challenging, it's challenging to pay for it, this might be a program that would work for you. And so you can go to NativeAmericaCalling.com to learn more about that. And we're about to go to a short break, but after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about New Mexico, as well as some of the other possibilities for funding that are coming down the pipeline in order to increase broadband in Native America. But we want to hear from you. What challenges do you face when it comes to getting reliable access to the internet in your area? Give us a call. Share 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Did you find it hard to get online and apply for unemployment or maybe to get that telehealth?
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. We're talking internet access. If you want to get in on the conversation, there's still time. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Let's try Melvin in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Hey there, Melvin.
Good morning. A couple years ago, there was a program for tribes to get Wi-Fi access, and it's so important. You know, I live out in a rural area, and hopefully one day we'll get that telemedicine, because the nurses have a small clinic, and a lot of times the nurses can't make it out for weather-wise, but it's so important for us to try to get that telehealth in our rural communities. And living out in the country, too, is the children. While the school year was down this last year, very limited number of kids had access. And so we got to do something about getting our future generations access.
Absolutely. Yep. Thanks, Melvin. Always great to hear from you. I want to add another voice to the conversation. Joining us from Sandia Pueblo in New Mexico is Derek Lenti. He is a representative for New Mexico's 65th district, and he's Isleta and Sandia Pueblo. Welcome back, Representative Lenti.
Makuam hinomopion kiremba. Greetings and good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for joining us again. So I know, you know, these stories that Jeffrey and Dr. Morse have been sharing, you've been hearing them, I'm sure, from your constituents or maybe experiencing them yourself with the pandemic. What are some of the challenges that Native New Mexicans have been facing when it comes to internet?
Native American in Mexico, I would have to say, has been one of the hardest hit in regards to what the pandemic has provided us and what it has exposed. And so I represent a large portion of Native American New Mexico. I have 7 pueblos, several chapters of the Navajo Nation, as well as the Hickory Apache Nation in my district. And the stories that have been illustrated previous to my coming on are all too very common at this point. In addition to many of those times where students just don't have the access of what the public schools in our school districts were resorted to having to do is print out hard copy paperwork, provide them on a Monday. The kids either do them that first day or they take the week to do it, return them on Friday, and then pick up another packet the following week. And this is not fair when you consider that all of their peers in other different settings never really stopped learning, so to speak, in the Western style of academics. And so they had the continuous internet access, whereas our students, you know, and it's not a bad thing to say, but many of our students then resorted to learning traditional values, traditional ways. I mean, we turned to our core values, where many of our students then went with grandma or grandpa or uncles or aunties to the fields and to the farms and learned how to once again grow a crop. And so it all goes hand in hand. But when you're talking about the academics today, we have absolutely lost at least a year and a half of their academic success as they move forward within their school careers.
Mm. Pluses and benefits, pluses and minuses when it comes to the pandemic, for sure. Maybe we're going to have a new generation of young farmers coming up, but you know, you still have to graduate, still have to meet those credits requirements and take those standardized tests that everyone loves so much. I know that a court in New Mexico just recently ruled on access to the internet for students. What can you share about this, Representative Lenti?
Yeah. Well, on April the 30th, so this is about a month ago, Judge Wilson ruled that the state must provide their at-risk students with the opportunity to have internet access. And so the judge ruled that there are 3 distinct things that the state must provide our students that are at risk with. And the first one is for students and teachers that each of those must have a device that will provide them the opportunity to engage with their online studies. Second to that is that students and teachers must also have broadband access in their homes, and that the student and that the state must now begin to provide and identify those types of students that do not have that. And finally, the last part of it is that we would need to make sure that all of these things are done in a timely fashion. And so at this point in time, the judge ruled this, and it's a continuation of a lawsuit that was decided back in 2018, a consolidated lawsuit named the Yazzie Martinez versus the State of New Mexico lawsuit, where the state ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, which the plaintiffs are low-income families or students, Native American students, English language learner students, as well as disabled students, that the state must provide them and had not been providing them an adequate education as constitutionally provided within our own state constitution. So this is just yet another slap, unfortunately, to the state of New Mexico that they have to, you know, we have to step up and provide our students with the adequate capabilities to ensure that they can be college and career ready in this day and age in 2021.
Mm. Well, court rulings don't usually come with a pot of money to put that into place. So, you know, how is New Mexico going to meet this obligation?
You know, I have with many advocates, education advocates from all across the state. We've teamed up and have been leading charges in regards to legislation that will provide not just throwing money at this problem, because it absolutely requires dollars, but, you know, throwing a lot of money at a problem does not make it go away. We have to have honest, identified, well-thought-out policies and protocols in terms of how do we shift from our Native American students being at the top of all the bad lists and the bottom of all the good lists when it comes to education. So it takes that type of really strategic planning, and that's been done over the past three years at this point in the legislature, and I have carried the majority of those pieces of legislation. And to be honest with you, is that it has taken a while to garner traction to ensure that funding would be provided. Everyone loves the policy. Everyone stands behind the shift in priorities. But when it comes down to providing the dollars to make it happen, that's where it's been a fight to ensure that the state can pony up and provide that type of dollars. Again, it's not about just throwing money at the problem. It's about making sure that it's married with the right policy to ensure our students have the best access to success. And so we've been working on that, and I'm proud to say that in 2021, we have begun to make headway by way of garnering additional dollars for our tribal communities to ensure that they can build the capacities within their own communities, whether that be building the capacities at their own tribal education departments, building capacities at their or building, generally speaking, at their tribal libraries for purchases of computers, and then broadband access. So we've begun making headway with millions and millions of dollars, and we hope to grow on that momentum.
Well, thank you for that, Representative Lenti. I want to go back to our other guest. Jeffrey Blackwell is with us. He's the Chief Strategy Officer and General Counsel for Amerind Risk. Also, just a note of disclosure, Amerind is a fiscal sponsor of our parent company, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Jeffrey, Representative Lenti used this phrase twice, throwing money at the problem. And I wonder if you might speak a little bit more about both how money can help, but also how the setting up the sort of infrastructure parameters to have tribes be successful with implementing broadband in their communities is necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to recognize Representative Lenti. We know him well here in New Mexico, of course. And we need him in Congress, but I really respect his perspective on this aspect of the issue. We can't just throw money at it. So we're making up for missed time and missed investments. And in those four areas that I talked about, deployment, adoption, affordability, and access, we're also at a time where the federal agencies are making up for missed time on addressing the issue, and state agencies as well. So what the representative said is certainly true. Recently, in late April, 31 different intertribal organizations, including the National Congress of American Indians, sent a letter to the leadership in Congress, Speaker Pelosi, Majority Leader Schumer, Minority Leader McCarthy, and Minority Leader McConnell, and outlined a number of needs in different areas, including all sorts of infrastructure, healthcare, water, energy, housing, including telecommunications. And in several requests, there was a major request to the Federal Communications Commission, to Congress, to create a $1 billion tribal broadband fund within the FCC to provide technical assistance and training for broadband infrastructure deployment, maintenance, and upgrades. We're missing an amount of technical capacity and then the applicative knowledge of how to move from deployment to adoption, affordability, and access. And it's got to be in certain states that have Indian country within them and that have programs that are aimed to address the needs, like the representative said, for our Indian children. We really need a coordination with state houses to see that this federal money is synthesized and is augmented by state and local funding and planning. There are programs within the Department of Agriculture, within the Department of Commerce, that all have a piece of the puzzle. But really, the thing that is not understood well, and it's very natural to us in Indian country because we see different sources of funding coming from different places and with different requirements from those different federal agencies, is really how to create a holistic approach that synthesizes all of it and makes up for, you know, over a generation of delay in addressing the tribal, you know, significant delay in addressing the tribal digital divide. I will say one of the things that I think is, let me just say this one thing about certain funding that's coming, it is going directly to tribes. That's very important because a lot of federal funding has gone instead in the past to carriers in the form of subsidies, or they had to be sort of centralized in the application process. And most certainly any deployment is a partnership between tribes and carriers. But this money going directly to tribal governments and to tribal institutions, it really puts them in the front seat of the car to help drive and navigate these issues. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dr. Morris, I'm curious, you know, the American Indian Policy Institute had some recommendations for addressing this issue as well. Do you see at the top of the list money directly to tribes?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, the policy, the recommendations that we made in the tribal technology assessment were developed with tribal leaders and knowledgeable persons along with us, but they were developed in 2018 and 2019. They predate where we're at now. Things have changed exponentially. I think that, so in any case, we never say that we represent tribes because we don't. We represent the research that we find. So I would say wholeheartedly that AIPI supports what NCAI asks for because that is a collective voice of Indian country. But I think what Jeff says is spot on. I mean, speaking for myself and for the Policy Institute, I can say that it should be that tribes should be at the forefront of any solution. So if funding goes directly to tribes, that can really change the game, I think. So, yes, I would agree now that that would be one of our recommendations. But it really, I think it was roundabout in our recommendations that came out in the tribal technology assessment. But we're just in a different place now. And I don't think we've ever, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but I don't. And Monica, I don't think we've ever seen funding go directly to tribes in the way that it has in the wake of the pandemic, in any capacity, whether it's broadband or anything else. And that is a game changer.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've heard as well. Jeff, you know, you want to weigh in on, you know, when we have these huge chunks of money coming to Native America. And the second round, we just did a show about it. There's a lot more ability, discretion to use it for things like broadband.
So absolutely. This is an unprecedented time, and it's important that our legislators, both at the national and local level, and our administrators from the president on down, understand that tribes know their land best. It is incumbent on tribes, since this funding is coming, and I should probably disclose, I co-chaired the Technology and Telecommunications Subcommittee of the National Congress of American Indians, along with Matthew Rantanen, no stranger to your show. And I also co-chair the Economic, Finance, and Community Development Committee of NCAI, the parent to that. And one of the things we've been telling, working with tribes nationwide on is helping get organized at home. So funding is coming. Funding is coming. There's no doubt it came in the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 21. It came in the American Rescue Plan. There is new planning for $1 billion infrastructure bill. There's no doubt that more funding will be coming. Just how and how much. But what tribes can do now is really get organized to synthesize a plan. So, for instance, tribal leadership engaging with folks like Ms. Leonard, who called earlier, the gentleman who called from Santee, to understand what's missing, what needs to be addressed, and how to put it into these applications and get it into motion. I will tell you, one of the big asks coming from NCAI to Congress in the letter that I mentioned earlier was $10 billion in additional funding for the Tribal Broadband Connectivity Grant Program, which is currently at NTIA. And just as Tracy said, you know, our thinking is cutting edge here. We're trying to be as current as possible with our advocacy and working with the administration. That may move to other places. Our advocacy may change that funding go to other administrators within the federal government. NTIA got the first $1 billion in a tranche of a tribal broadband connectivity program. And unfortunately but for good reasons, unfortunately is well behind their statutory deadline of February 25th of getting the application out. It's what now, June 1st?
Right. Well, unfortunately, Jeffrey, we're going to have to leave it there. But thank you all so much for being on the show today, Dr. Tracy Morris, Jeffrey Blackwell, and Representative Derek Lenti. We're back tomorrow with a conversation about voting rights.
Support by the Sioux Trading Post, whose special selection of dried herbs are chosen for superior quality, and many sage, sweetgrass braids, and red willow bark and cedar are wild-crafted. All available at SiouxTrading.com. Wopila.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Bonjour. Nawaj Apit is young Chiapi Tendagwa Jabindagay Biagazl Young Jedabayagay Siwang Nananda Wiaguyang. Ganoj. Enokid Anishinaabe Yakuzi Wigamigung, Nawaj Jigikendaman, Mawadishawain Healthcare.gov, Gema Ganoj, 1-800-318-2596. Gaundinagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.